Tired of traditional talk? People pontificating about this or that, the left or the right? Sometimes the truth is just all lost in the noise. Having learned life lessons the hard way, Chuck Gallagher, international speaker and author, cuts through the noise to share truth through transparency. Nationally known guests talk about what's important to you, your life, your concerns, and your success. So tune in, turn on to Straight Talk with Chuck Gallagher. Now, here's your host, Chuck Gallagher.
This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and it is such a delight to be with you. I have a guest today, Rob Heppel with FuneralGurus.com. And okay, this is going to be a little bit of a different show. Maybe some people would call it strange, but we're going to talk about one's funeral. And I have to admit, at the ripe old age of 57, it is not exactly the thing that I have spent lots and lots of time thinking about for myself. In fact, I don't know, maybe 9 months, 10 months ago, I was thinking that I was more like 39, maybe 41. I don't know. I mean, I felt like young and like life was just still there. And then all of a sudden I find out that I've got a herniated disc, which turned out to be a real pain in the, well, you know what. Mm. And now I'm recovering from surgery, from back surgery. And I'll never forget the lady that lives next door. Her mother said to me, she says, "Son, you might need a cane. I've got several." And I was nice, and I took her cane, and I laughed to my wife and said, "Can you believe this?" And 3 weeks later, to get from the bed to the bathroom, I was walking with a cane, and I felt like I was more like 77. And it kind of hit me that maybe looking in the mirror, my mind might think one thing, but my body is kind of responding a little different. And perhaps those prearrangement plans that I so willfully crafted years ago might come into play sooner than I anticipate. And that caused me to think about what kind of funeral do I really want? In fact, going to the hospital, they said, "Now, I assume you have a healthcare power of attorney and you have your will updated and so forth." And I'm like, "Dude, this is just back surgery. I mean, you know, this is not something I should die from." But it brought into play the total reality that at some point, we have to make those decisions. And I've been in this industry for a long time, and certainly Rob has. And so, Rob, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Rob, again, can be found at FuneralGurus.com. And if there is one person on this planet that really can kind of see into the future of where funerals are going and what we can expect and what to really look for, Rob Heppel is the guy. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks, Chuck, and thanks for that great introduction.
Well, you know,
I'll try to live up to it.
Yeah, well, facts are facts. I mean, you are a guru, and you do look into the future. And Rob has the benefit of speaking in many cases to people within the industry, talking about what to expect and the direction that things are going. So Rob, let me first start off by saying, tell us a little bit about you and how did you get into looking at the funeral industry, especially looking into the future of it and where things are going?
Sure. Well, I'm a fourth generation funeral director, and on my mom's side of the family, they started a funeral home over 100 years ago in Bolton, Ontario, which is just northwest of Toronto. Now, fortunate for me, my mom moved west and met my dad, who was born here in Victoria, BC. So we're on the west coast of Canada, just north of Seattle. And especially right now, we're probably the only place in Canada that's not shoveling snow. We're just busy counting daffodil bulbs and cherry blossoms and things like that.
Oh, listen to you. That is just rough for people listening to this up in Rhode Island and different places. Wow.
I call myself a Lonnie. I'm a left out nephew. So the business was my great grandfather's, then my grandfather's, and then my uncle's, and then now my cousin's working there. But that would mean having to go back there, and I do go back quite often. But I'm happy where I am. So what happened when I graduated from high school? I had this big dream of being an NHL goalie. and I actually went out to Ontario to play hockey. And during the summer, though, I lived at the funeral home with my grandma and grandpa. And grandpa had this rule. He said, if you can eat and sleep, you can work. So when I was 18 years old, he'd be waking me up in the middle of the night to go perform a transfer from a local nursing home if someone had died, or we would get things set up at the cemetery or help around the funeral home, wash cars. And then after the summer, I actually came back west to play hockey. And my dad said, well, you're just not going to sit around all day and play hockey at night. So, and get this, I was so shy that my dad phoned the local funeral home and arranged an interview for me. I didn't even do it myself.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that's how kind of shy I was about, you know, talking and that. So, yeah, things have changed since then. No and kidding. So I started with McCall's and worked there from 1986 for about 20 years and still now work with them. They're clients of mine. And the progression in that time, well, first of all, similar to areas like California, Arizona, Florida, retirement areas in the U.S., so is the West Coast of Canada. And in those areas, you actually see the trends happen a little sooner. And I think it's because, you know, people who have left where they've where they grew up and moved to maybe a more moderate climate, they not only do they leave their hometown, but they leave a lot of traditions behind as well. And they kind of create their own new life. And so with that, we were faced with a lot of trends that faced the industry far before anyone else did. So as an example, the cremation rate here in Victoria right now is 92%.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I started in 1986, it was, I think, like 66, 67%, which is still higher than what the national average is in the U.S. today. So, and that's, you know, almost 30 years before. So we were dealing with things that no one else was dealing with. And so we had to learn by trial and error. And that's kind of where, not that I could see into the future, but I was experiencing the present in a place that was just ahead of everywhere else.
Sure. Sure.
And that's where, so the funeral futurist term comes from. And what was happening was the other funeral homes, as this became, now not that cremation's bad, we just never, the industry never really had to deal with it that much and didn't really know how to embrace it. And I think there became negative sentiments because, you know, funeral service was pretty easy for people back a generation or two ago. Not that they didn't work hard, but people chose, you know, to have a service in the church or at the funeral home and followed by burial. And it was pretty simple. And everyone had those types of services. So when people started wanting different options, the funeral industry didn't really keep up to that. So when we didn't have options for them, people would choose nothing and has really, really changed the industry. So now we're trying to, as an industry, we're trying to catch up. So yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
So the industry has changed. You know, it's fascinating. We've got about 3 minutes before our break. One of the things, Robin, that really strikes me is I sit back and as a consumer, not as a funeral director, but as a consumer, I sit and I think, you know, gee, what would I really want? And what's important to me? And yet, I have to say that, you know, you could take a funeral director, someone that has that license from 1940 or 1950, put them into 2015, and fundamentally, it's still going to be essentially the same thing, except for perhaps that person from the 40s or 50s would not be as prepared for the technology of cremation today. So on one level, it almost seems like we think that, wow, this is really changing, and boy, what's important to me if I were to die is really significant, but yet I don't know that it's changed that much. Do you have a perspective on that? We've got about 2 minutes.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the steps involved when someone dies are still the same. It's kind of how those, what goes in between those steps that is different, where, you know, one of the steps would be planning the funeral. Now that planning process and the actual delivery of the service or the show or celebration of life is what's changed. But then, you know, following that would need to be the burial or need to be the cremation. And then there's all the other things that happen to a family that has experienced a death. So a lot of the things haven't changed. It's just the components in the process have, the content has changed.
It's interesting. One of the things that I like to do here on Straight Talk Radio is really have just a very open conversation about what could happen. So as we prepare to go into the break, Robin, one of the things that we'll do when we get back is we're going to talk about, I guess, some things that maybe are outliers. First, I recognize that there's traditional arrangements in cremation, and we certainly need to talk about that to some extent. But there are things like funeral concierge and other types of things to insulate the family from the emotion that's associated with it. So I think it'll be fascinating when we get back here on Straight Talk Radio to talk with Robin Heppel at funeralgurus.com. Robin has years of experience in understanding really what's taking place on the leading edge of dealing with the loss of a loved one and how we prepare for that funeral. So stick with us. We'll be back in just a minute. I'm back with my guest, Robin Heppel, with funeralgurus.com. Robin is, I think you said, fourth generation funeral director out in Vancouver, British Columbia. By the way, I went to Vancouver, and oh my goodness, what a beautiful, beautiful place. That is quite awesome. I'm a bit jealous, I have to tell you. But we're talking about funerals, and we're talking about end of life. And I have to tell you, Robin, I was very touched by a story that was shared to me at an ICCFA convention. A gentleman came up and he said that a lady had come to him and said, I want to plan my funeral. And as a funeral director, he said, no problem. Come in. Let's begin the process. She said, no, you don't understand. She said, just listen, Sonny, which I thought was kind of cute. She said, here's what I want to have happen. She said, when I die, I want you to take care of my body and cremate me. She said, now, there are 125-ish or so people around the country that I am deeply connected with. And she apparently had terminal cancer. And so she said, over the course of the last part of my life, I am going to prepare a package for each one of them that has things in that package that are significant to those people and me. Part of what really created the fabric of my life. And she said, what I want you to do is rent the Ritz-Carlton. This was in Florida. I want you to rent a room in the Ritz-Carlton. I want you to invite them. I'm going to set money aside to be able to take care of transportation, obviously fairly wealthy. And she said, I want them within the scope of a month or two to all gather together. And she said, you're going to be the person, kind of like the MC of this event, and we're going to have dinner. And I want each one of them to have their box and to be able to say something, because she said, you know, the truth of who I am is the interaction I've had with these people. And when they're all together, that creates the tapestry of my life that really says the truth of my existence. That's what my plan is. And when he was telling me this, I was thinking, oh, touch my beating heart, because to me, that's what a funeral should be about. And although I do recognize not everybody has the wealth to be able to make that happen. So maybe it's just me, but I think baby boomers really want the celebration. We want people to recognize our existence, but I don't know that we feel like we get it when the time comes to arrange a funeral.
Well, yeah, I think, it's tough, and the industry is going through this transition where you have really proactive people like the funeral director that you were talking to. Well, if they said yes, we'll do that for you.
And they did.
If Sonny said that, that would be great. But then there's others that kind of just wish it was 20 years ago. And, you know, unfortunately, and I think, you know, that happens in a lot of industries. It's just really aware to us because we're within our own little fishbowl. So, I think we really do need to look at, I like to think of it when we kind of look back, especially when we're faced with challenges, as a funeral director, we tend to just look back, well, what would have my parents had done, or, you know, the generation before me? And, you know, that generation and even the generation before hasn't been dealt, they don't have to deal with some of the issues that we deal with all the technology, with the mobility of people. And, you know, we're dealing with things that they never dealt with. But I think we can get real lessons even like from like my great grandfather's time, who were the quote undertakers who undertook all the tasks that went along when someone had died. And they were really entrepreneurs, because they, you know, they were starting something new. And I think if we kind of take that mindset and apply it to today, what they did was they found out what the family wanted, who, you know, when someone had died, and they provided all those different services. We've done a great job in the last 100 years of narrowing our role from undertaking all the things that happened, to funeral directing, where we direct funerals. And as this lady didn't want to have a funeral, but and luckily that she actually went to this person and asked the funeral director or the funeral professional to help her with that. I think a lot of times the funeral homes are getting sidestepped in that process. They get the funeral home to deal with what by the, you know, state or provincial regulations, you have to be licensed to either transport the deceased or register the death, and then transport the deceased to the disposition, whether it's cremation or burial. But then outside of that, it doesn't necessarily have to be conducted by a funeral director. So I think it's great that that funeral director was asked to be involved. And, you know, I get these, I've had the opportunity to serve as a MC and a celebrant. So the celebrant movement is, has been, you know, really probably even more than 20 years, 25 years, but, Doug Manning and Glenda Stansbury they're from Oklahoma, and they've created celebrant training, and I've taken celebrant training, and that helps it can be funeral directors, it can be just general public, and teaches them how to conduct a funeral service. So if someone isn't going to use a clergy person, then they can use a celebrant. And what, they also say that funeral directors should become more like an MC. So instead of us standing at the back of the chapel looking like we're not doing anything, then they wonder, well, why do we need them? Because the two guys just stand at the back, where if we're up front and we're actually conducting the service and asking the clergy to come up and do their part and asking the family to come up and do their part. So it's to the point where I think, well, I was sharing with you the story of my dad's service. So as a funeral director, or any funeral director who saw my dad's service, would have think, well, that's a traditional funeral. The casket was there and we went out to the burial afterwards. But to all the people there, that wasn't really that important whether the casket was there or not. And, you know, I feel that it does add to it, because it does give a bit of reality that the death has occurred. But all the attendees, the non-funeral people, would have thought that was a celebration of life. And one of the greatest compliments that I've ever had, when I, the first time that I took a celebrant service, one of the attendees came up to me afterwards and said, you know, I don't want to have a funeral, but I want one of those. Like, he didn't even know what to call it.
Right.
And, you know, so we would now call it a celebration of life. But I think we just need to be more open as the funeral directors. And I also think, and I'm glad that we're, you know, talking to the public here today, I think the public should ask, you know, what are their options, or don't think that any requests might be looked at as silly or inappropriate. Usually, as long as a request is legal and ethical, most funeral directors will accommodate. So, that's what I try to share with them anyway.
Right. You know, Robin, it's been interesting over the years. There've been things that I've seen, and I know you have as well. But I'll mention a couple of them. I was at a cemetery in Eastern Tennessee, and a gentleman died, And probably the most interesting part of that was at the committal service at the cemetery, they brought his horse. And, you know, I thought, okay, that's going to be kind of cool. I was amazed at, and I don't know how to put this, but at the reverence of the horse. It was almost as if the horse knew what was taking place. And it was fascinating to see, but very touching for the family. And a year or so ago, I was down in Florida and I went into a funeral home. And this was, now this one kind of flipped me out, I have to be honest. But a young lady died, I'm going to say in high school, committed suicide. It was certainly a tragic loss for the family, but the family wanted the service. They didn't want it to look like a funeral, so they literally recreated her bedroom in the front of the funeral chapel. Total recreation. Moved everything out, put it back, stuffed animals, pictures on the wall, so forth and so on, and the young lady was lying in her bed. And it was different, but you hit on a point that we've got just a few minutes before a break, which is people need to think about what would I want and not be constrained by, well, here's what we've seen at a funeral, but think about it. It could be as outlandish as you can think. Now, as long as it's not harming or hurting someone, requests like that can be accommodated.
Exactly. And they don't all, and I think sometimes the public thinks that some of those requests will then start costing a lot of money. And maybe in our next segment, we can, talk about, what really does increase the cost of the service and what doesn't. And, I think too, we can talk about what I like to call the funeral arrangement stalemate, where there's two parties on either side of the table and either party doesn't know what to ask or what to say.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. I think that's absolutely correct. Most of the time when a family is thrust into a funeral, A, they have no experience in doing it. We have much more experience in buying a car than we do in creating a funeral arrangement. And for those of us that are males, we likely will be involved in four. Our mom, our dad, our mother-in-law, and father-in-law. Our wives will be involved in five. That's us, because statistically we'll die before our female counterparts. But we don't have experience in doing it, and therefore we don't know what to ask and what to take place. So this is Straight Talk Radio. My guest is funeral guru Robin Heppel. You can visit Robin's site at funeralgurus.com. There's all kinds of great information there, some really cool and interesting blogs, and some things that I think would be helpful to the folks that are listening here on Straight Talk Radio. Stick with me. We'll be back right after the break. We're back with my guest, Robin Heppel, with funeralgurus.com. This is one of those shows. It's the last show to let you down. Oh, I know. The jokes are really bad in the funeral industry. But, it's really important to be open and to be able to carry on a conversation about it. It's a touchy subject and one that many people don't want to talk about. And most people tend to think that it's an incredibly expensive issue. So, Robin, I really like to go down two different roads. One, let's talk a little bit about costs and the things that are associated with creating the funeral or the cremation service. And the other side to that is, in this segment, let's also talk a little bit about making pre-arrangement plans and what's involved in that and the wisdom and logic of funding it or not.
Sure.
So talk to us a little bit about, let's look at the cost. Let's say that mom dies and I'm thrust into the experience of having to make funeral arrangements. What am I going to practically look at as the primary cost factors?
Well, it's broken down into three or five categories, five if we kind of get nitpicky. But really, there's the cost, first of all, the professional services. Now, so that's really the labor from the funeral home or the funeral provider.
Right.
That would include picking the deceased up from the place of death. Now, that can be maybe from the home, maybe from a hospital, maybe from a care home or hospice. And that, you know, sometimes folks don't realize that that can happen, you know, 24 hours a day. So when I started, that's what one of the first jobs that I had. And many times I get called out in the middle of the night to perform that service. Then there is the preparation of the deceased, and that could be from really nothing. If people don't want anything at all, then there wouldn't be anything. Maybe it's just some basic hygienic care where the deceased is disinfected and maybe clothed properly. Sometimes people, when they're transferred from a hospital, they're just in a nursing gown or even in one of those paper gowns. And so one of the options would be to have something a little bit more dignified or even dressed in their own clothes. If someone is going to be viewed, whether it's a private family viewing or more of a public visitation, or it's recommended that there be embalming and then there would be the dressing of the deceased with some light cosmetics just to give people more of a lifelike appearance. And then the other costs in the professional services would be the administration. So the registration of the death, having to contact the doctor or the coroner, then dealing with the Department of Vital Statistics to register the death and then obtain the death certificates. And then there's the service part of that. So arranging the service, conducting the service, making the service happen, whether it's in the chapel, at a church or at a other location. And the other location part is becoming more and more popular. So that's the professional services, and that can range from, it all depends. The prices throughout North America range so much from, from a low cost cremation, under $1,000 to, a funeral service that could be $15,000 or more, and not even including the reception. The next part, though, is would be the casket or cremation container. So, if someone's being cremated, they still need in most places some form of rigid container just to transport the deceased into the crematorium and into the retort, and or up to a casket, whether it's made out of hardwood or steel. And the steel ones are for burial. They can't be cremated. So there's a huge range there, and that's probably the biggest variable in costs is the casket, and then other merchandise such as urns for cremation or vaults for burial. Then you have then the cemetery fees would be next, and that could be or cremation fee. So maybe it's just the cremation fee itself, or the purchasing of the plot, the digging of the grave. And then the closing of the grave. And then finally, the last couple in the five would be taxes. So some places, some states and provinces don't charge tax, but most do. And then...
You're talking sales tax on sales the tax. Merchandise you purchased. Okay, right. That's right. I got it.
And then, finally would be cash advances or disbursements. So, sometimes when people are shopping around, they are looking for, I think most consumers just want to know the bottom line. And so you need to be careful if someone's saying, funerals or cremations from $495, the word from leaves it to like it's not going to be $495. That's just where they start. And then there's all these other costs and, the obituary, the flowers, death certificates could all be in that cash advance segment of the kind of the five areas.
So you're a consumer. You and I will be at some point, but you're a consumer and the time has come and you're needing to make these arrangements. So it sounds to me like that within reason, I probably am needing to think about if it's a traditional service, somewhere in the $9,000-ish range for the funeral, if I'm getting moderate merchandise, and perhaps another $4,000 to $5,000 to $6,000 at a cemetery. So that could be easily a $15,000 expense that I need to be prepared for.
Exactly. And I think the the latest statistics from the NFDA, the National Funeral Directors Association, is the average funeral is it's either 6,700 or 7,600, and you know, varies in there. But that would be for the funeral home. That's not including cemetery, plot, opening and closing, the vault, and the monument or marker. So yeah, easily up to 15,000. And then Chuck, we haven't talked about the party yet. You know, so the reception or the party, the luncheon, whatever it's called or whatever it's going to be, can, range from $3,000 to, you know, if they're go to maybe to the golf or country club, could be, you know, $15,000 if they have an open bar or whatever. So yes, it can be, and you know, as you said, the lady at the Ritz-Carlton, I'm sure it wasn't $3,000.
You know, here's the thing, Robin, I'm going to say it on the front end. This is a personal opinion on my part. It doesn't mean, therefore, it's right by any stretch of the imagination. But I go back to when Larry Hagman, J.R. Ewing, died, and I thought it was really fascinating. Yeah, like who shot J.R.? but when he died, and happened, by the way, to be in Dallas, Texas. The funeral home that was responsible for his arrangements only did a cremation. This is the thing that I think is just, maybe it's, again, it's just me, but the soiree, the party, all of the stuff that was surrounding the honor and celebration of Larry Hagman's life was actually done out at South Fork Ranch by Lorelar or whoever the TV organization was that had initially produced Dallas. But they took care of the party. The funeral home was taking care of the physical pickup and disposition of the body. And I have to say, and I think probably people listening to the radio might have the same opinion, at least some, and that is, why do I want to pay for all of this stuff that I'm not going to enjoy? I'm not going to enjoy a casket. I'm not going to enjoy an out-of-burial container. Being in the ground is irrelevant. I doubt my kids are ever really going to want to spend a whole lot of time in a cemetery. So just cremate me, and then let's put that $15,000 in the party. Because the people that are living will remember the party. They're not likely ever going to remember the somber service or the type of casket that I had or where I am laid to rest. So are you seeing that more? Because I know you're in a progressive area, and in 92% cremation, there's got to be something, or else I'm just not really on track.
Yeah, well, I think you know, one thing that speaks to that is the actual revenues from caskets is actually exceeded from revenues in catering. So catering is on the upswing, and the casket sales are on the downswing. And I think why this has been such a struggle for funeral homes, or and maybe still is that just the way the kind of the finances were within the industry back, 20 years ago, I think like 1984, the FTC put in the funeral rule where they had to itemize all the prices, where it used to be just the unit pricing or a package price. And at that point, when the dollars got divvied up, a lot more of the dollars got placed on the caskets. They were marked up a lot higher. And the services, the professional services, the labor, the professional skill that goes into coordinating the services and doing everything was kind of suppressed. And I think the public said, hey, like these caskets are way too expensive and we really don't need them. We need more of the, we just want more of the services or, you know, the celebration. So so the industry is now correcting that. Some are doing a better job than others. And kind of thinking back like that undertaker, that entrepreneur, of then putting themselves in front of the catering. So 15 years ago, you would never have heard a funeral home, you know, having a liquor license. Now, right. You know, I'm sure there's dozens, if not hundreds, that do that just for that case. They're putting themselves in front of what those families want.
Great. So here's what we're going to do. We're pushing a break. So this is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. I'm talking with Robin Heppel with funeralgurus.com. Robin is on the cutting edge of knowing what really is out there and what can take place. So Robin, when we get back, since we were talking about a liquor license, why don't we do this? We're going to talk about some of the trends that are taking place, some of the things that people are looking to do that they want to do that are unique and creative, so that when we leave this show, folks can say, huh, never thought of it that way, and perhaps that might work for me. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Chuck Gallagher with Straight Talk Radio, and we have been talking with Robin Heppel with funeralgurus.com. You know, talking about a funeral isn't generally fun, although I kind of like the idea of putting the fun back in funerals. And it's funny because I think that baby boomers have a greater